It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
We're back for more.
With Murray. Murray Whiteman. Now the, I don't know what you are here,
artist/illustrator.
A man like no other, the illustrated life of Jesus. And we were just talking about the beginning stage when we finished last week, the beginning stages of us starting to come together, talk about doing this together, talk about a book and Windblown Media. We haven't said that yet. Windblown Media is the publisher of this thing. Cute little leaf design there on the spine.
So, there you go.
Windblown Media, this is their next book, and that's Brad's deal. But we didn't even tell people where they could get copies of the book if they wanted to. One, you're going to have to wait till November because it's going to probably be early November before we get them off the boat and through TSA and whoever else needs to inspect these things.
But we'll have a way for people to pre-order.
Yeah, you can pre-order now. You can Murray's got a website, livestream.org, and then Brad at Windblown Media. So there's lots of ways you can pre-order, and then we'll ship them to folks as soon as they get in. So, and Murray, you want to give your website just so folks
know? Oh, it's mwart.net.
Yeah, and I'll put all three of those as a link at the bottom of the podcast so you can find it. mwart.net. You got some other art up there people can kind of take a look at?
Yeah, I've got about 250 samples of different things I've worked on in my career.
Oh, just a small little 250 up there?
Is it some of the stuff that's hanging around your house? On your walls and things?
A few of them. Most of it's commercial stuff because paintings people don't care that much about. They care about,
It's your resume site, is it?
Yeah, it's a resume site for that. It's going to be changing a little bit because it's kind of fun. I just put the book cover on the front page. So people that have come there for years to find out the commercial site, I kind of have a surprise for them coming in.
Ooh. Wow. Hopefully your commercial contracts don't cut off with all that on the front. Well, it's lovely to see it. Brad brought us copies in, as we said earlier this morning. It's the first time we've seen it in print. And man, after all the work and time that's gone into this and dialogue and discussion, it's amazing to see it sit here, and wish we didn't have a warehouse full to ship out to others quite yet, but I'm going to take mine. I head off St. Louis. So I'm going to take mine with me and show it around and see what folks think. But yeah, excited.
It is. It's. I was saying earlier that everybody didn't hear. When we started talking about this and we all did some little bit of writing when we broke this down into vignettes rather than a straight storyline through. When I started hearing what you guys had written, the introduction when it talks about creation, and now all of a sudden I'm an artist and I view creation. I see exploding suns and light beams shooting through. And I try to explain that to people and I get a frosted look in their eyes. Hmm. What you wrote captures that in my heart. Brad does a great section where John the Baptist, we kind of pass over, and he talks about the struggle John had in prison, what's going on. And is this really the Messiah, even though God told me it is? And, that questioning that happens in our walk with the Lord, those kinds of things.
Particularly because he's not helping me at the
moment. Yeah. I mean, I've been the great prophet.
He sets the captives free as I sit here in prison. Oh my, what a wonderful journey this is.
Yeah, and I was the key guy. I really did everything I was supposed to.
That I think the thing that I really loved about working through this with you guys was just being able to kind of take a fresh look at the story of the life of Jesus and not gloss over.
Yeah.
To stop and actually go, wait a minute, these were real people. How did they deal with this? I mean, we've heard it for the umpteenth time.
Exactly.
They were living it for the first time. How in the world were they prepped to grasp? All of a sudden, angels blast out of heaven. Today, born for you is a savior. And, I mean, the shepherds, they're like freaked out. Not just, oh, nice. Bad nativity.
This'll make a great Christmas pageant.
Let's go frolic to the manger.
Let's sing a song.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that was absolutely, that blew my mind right there is the whole bit where all of a sudden the angels make a declaration, God is pleased with men.
Amen.
And I'm just going like, you know what? I'm sorry, that is not the gospel as it unfortunately has been proclaimed. They don't lead with that.
No.
As if this whole thing is happening because God is totally jazzed with y'all.
He loves you.
Yeah. I mean, I looked at that and I just went, I don't think we have declared that well. And so to be able to, you know, peppered throughout the beginning to the end, I just think are wonderful little nuggets of just going like, I bet you haven't thought of it that way before.
That's my hope. I mean, one of the things when you first show Mary is what others could not see or who would have imagined. One of the things we broke down when we were looking at these vignettes is trying to come up with a little headline that would tease you into it and maybe open your mind, which I thought was a marvelous idea, of what's going on there. And so you think of what others could not see. Now here's, now again, I come from the movie industry and the entertainment industry, and I told the Lord at one time when I was a younger believer, you blew it. I said, look, I said, if I'm going to declare my holy son to the earth, I know what movies
come
is
on,
like.
Special effects,
I said, you're bringing down angels and you go to shepherds in the field? You go to the temple. You come down into
or
the
Herod's
temple
palace,
and then Herod's palace. And how about to the...
Come on, throw a premiere.
That's right. I mean, I want lights going
center
off.
Jerusalem.
Star Wars high in effect. And everybody going, oh my God, drop and run, man. It's
he does sound effects really good.
Well, there was light and A-star. A-star?
You know, and I'm going like, I appreciate that you came to shepherds, but there's some other people that might have helped. And then you have... The wise men coming from a long ways away, they can see it, but the religious leaders who had studied it and knew it meticulously and could quote it and give you the doctrine missed him. And I was thinking, like, we have a section where here's Simeon in the temple waiting. God's promised him, you're going to see my Messiah. Now, all the religious leaders knew that promise. They believed it. They taught it. They could quote it.
They glossed over.
And... They missed it. He comes in their midst, and they miss it. And old Simeon standing there going, ah, thank you. This is it.
This is the one.
He could see the baby. They couldn't. And that's the wonder for the of this book for me is that you guys were able to write those wonder moments in. I mean, even the fact that you let me include something which most people think is nuts. I did have a special effects scene when Sodom and Gomorrah is being fried.
That was left over from your Zeus days.
Yes.
If you missed the podcast last
week.
I'm like, oh, it was a great art. We had to use it for something. So you have to get the book to see how we worked that in. Is that our cliffhanger for people?
I think so, because you guys were able to see the heart of God behind it. And I think that's what the three of us share, is that so often the heart of God is taken away or misinterpreted by what we've been taught. Or how people have misunderstood him, that here is Father, that there's a verse I remember that, and I wish I could tell you where it's found, but it basically says, God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Now, if that's true.
The good cop, bad cop thing ain't
yeah,
accurate.
There's something missing here. Yeah. But if we look at Jesus and he said, you see me, you've seen the Father. Okay, then let's stop interpreting Jesus through the rest of the Bible. And in fact, I believe, Wayne, you've done this in more detail.
Well, it was interesting. You're mentioning it. I was thinking about when I was working on this the last couple of years, I personally, just in my own study again, just immersed myself in the Gospels, just read them over and over and just meditate on the Gospels. And I tell this story of being in Washington, D.C. a few years ago with my father and flew him out there to be part of the dedication of the World War II Memorial because he fought in World War II, was wounded in France. And we were at Mount Vernon. I've been to Mount Vernon 3 or 4 times with my kids and Sarah and other things. First time I've been there with my dad. But I've been there often. I know George Washington as a character, you know, and all the stories we read about in history book growing up. But there was a reenactor this time who came in, sat down at the dining room table and talked about the moment when they brought him word from Philadelphia that he was going to be the first president of the United States. And he didn't want to be. He wanted to retire from the war and be at Mount Vernon and take care of his plantation. And this reenactor just reenacted his feelings the moment this thing came. And for the first time in my life, George Washington became more than a character in a book to me or
yes,
a character in a
yes,
movie or
yes.
a story. This was a real guy. He was at this table doing this. And reinserting myself in the Gospels like that for this time as we're writing through these things together and just and preparing for the Jesus lens, which you were referring to, of really how do we read the whole of Scripture if we don't read it through the revelation of Jesus? Yeah. And mostly we don't. So we come out with this good cop, bad cop, God's this mean, horrible guy through most of the Bible, and then he goes to a Billy Graham crusade after Malachi or something and gets saved. And so many people have that mistaken notion of or that he's really angry with the away team, but he's really is Abba with the home team. And yeah. And then it all depends on your performance. And then we miss stuff like, you know, Luke 6, where he says, when he tells us to love our enemies. I used to read that going, that's pretty cheap. We have to love ours. You get to blast your oblivion. And, you know, vengeance is mine. I will repay. And yet in the same Luke 6, where it says, love your enemies. And if someone asks for your coat, give them your cloak also. He's saying, for even God is kind and gracious to the wicked and the ungrateful. I'm going, never heard that. I've read Luke hundreds of times, never seen it before. I saw it a year and a half ago in Kenya when I'm reading it after, in response to a question that we had. I always grew up with the idea that there was a home team and an away team. And yes. You want to make sure you're on the home team because the away team gets obliterated. Instead of, no, God's a lover. God's a lover to even the unbelievers in the world who don't know who he is yet. And destruction doesn't come from his hand because he's a destroyer. It's part of the consuming sin in the age so that he can redeem us to himself. He's the rescuer in the story. He's not the destroyer in the story. And religion, I think, has got it wrong because we need people to be afraid to do what we want them to do. And that becomes a problem.
And it becomes a short step because you only get to go so far and then you have to find the system. I have a good friend who desperately wants to know the new commandments of Jesus. So he has a checklist he can follow. And he's got such a great heart, but he's been trained that way, that there's a checklist rather than knowing Father. And sometimes Father explains it to you, and other times he says, why does the moon follow the car? And you're just in the car with him and say, you know what? I can be at peace with Daddy driving the car. Because I don't know all the turns and things ahead. He does.
Well, I think that's the thing that fascinated me when you look at the life of Jesus is, you know, I don't think we stop and think long enough to recognize that when he took on humanity, he lived as one of us, limited. He didn't know everything.
Thank
and I
you.
Think that's a really hard
that's
thing
key.
For most of us. You know, it's like, well, of course, well, he's Jesus. And it's like, well, okay, he did have a leg up. He didn't start with sin like we do. Now, that's not just a little leg.
Not huge.
That's a massive leg. But I look at the fact that if he's tempted in all ways such as we are, there's not anything that I go through that he, in effect, did not absolutely walk through. And I marveled afresh going, how did he actually not sin? I mean, I might have a few good hours in a row and a few good days, maybe, but it's like from day one to the cross, I think of all the times that all of redemption could have been fumbled.
It's astounding, isn't it?
Oh, I mean, I just sat there going, like, I don't think we have any idea what was fully on the line, that we frankly don't pick up a lot of information on that story. It's like, it's not, even in the Gospels, we pick it up at, you know, when he's older, he's going like, but there's a marvelous time where he's like, he just celebrated being a human being.
And you guys, in some of our conversations, this is the same thing that happened to me in going back through this and looking at it. I don't remember which one of you said it. God wasn't in a hurry. And I'm thinking again back to my background. If you're going to do this, let's get salvation on the road. Let's make
it
very clear.
Come on, let's go. We got people to say.
Yeah. And I've always thought of Jesus at 29 years old working on the carpenter bench with the centurions going by and everybody messed up, knowing by then his mission. But it's not time. And at peace, not pressured, I got to get out there and start preaching. Because if I don't preach and people don't see miracles, I mean, what's God going to do? I was sent to do this, and he is content being a son, a brother, a friend, and a good carpenter. And I'm like, there's something there that I've never heard talked about. There's this humanity like you're talking about. I realize the hardest thing for me sometimes is uncertainty. I can deal with a lot of stuff in my life, but uncertainty is very hard for me.
Financial markets don't do so good with it either.
Okay, well, that's kind of to live in. So I'm thinking, if Jesus went through everything we suffered, there were times when he was uncertain.
Absolutely.
But I've always been taught, you know, he knew everything was going on and this. And then you see him, if you start looking at the Gospels again, somebody's coming up and he's not sure what's going on yet. Other times he knows because the Holy Spirit has spoken to him, but other times he's kind of working his way through. He's walking down the road and somebody comes up to him and goes, hey, hey, you. He goes, yes, yes. You know, that's a different thing. That's
see, what I hope people would capture out of this, you know, my little desire for it is I think this unveils Jesus, who is like us
yes.
in this moment in terms of, I actually have a someone I can follow. How in the world did he live the life that he did? Well, he did it trusting and leaning on the Father, knowing he was loved. That's what empowered him.
Yes.
I get that same invitation. I don't think God came as a son to go, oh, I'll just, you know, have fun with this Trinity thing. They won't get it. You know, I think he revealed the Son to show us how what kind of relationship we were invited into. And my hope is that when people would look and see this afresh, they would go like, wait a minute, this thing is very much something I can embrace, I can enter into, and I can know for myself. And, you know, no, I don't need to be the Savior, but I can walk in that same pathway and know the kind of joy. I love the fact that, you know, this unveils those aspects where it's like, no, he didn't understand it all. The fact that he had to figure it out, and I was like, all of a sudden he's God, and he's like, how does that not absolutely mess you up? I don't know. I mean, I marvel at that. Like, yeah. How do you figure out who you are and then not be some crazy megalomaniac?
Or even at what, I mean, I love what you brought to it when you did the thing on his childhood years. When does that come clear to him? At 12, he has a sense of his father's business, but does he have a sense of who he is yet? And if he grew in wisdom and in stature and
yes.
with God, a man, then he didn't just, you know, laying in the manger going, wow, it'd be good when I get to be 30 and do something like that. I mean,
and he had a stopwatch in the corner of the crib.
Yeah, whittling his thumbs.
He's a baby like little baby Austin, you know, and there's probably not much going on in there yet. I mean, his brain develops, and alongside that, his relationship with God is developing. And how does he know? When does he know that Joseph's not quite his dad like the other kids have dads in the neighborhood? And where does he come to that identity? And I just think that there's, as you said, Brad, at one point, 90% of Jesus' life was lived in the very common things we live every day. And we only focus on those last 3 years.
Yes.
We get all the attention, all the press, and all the miracles. But for 20, 30 years, he didn't do a miracle. He didn't teach a sermon. He didn't do anything that we consider valuable in ministry. And yet he lived with God through the most mundane realities of our life. And I think that empowers us in our own world, wherever we're living in, whatever we're doing. And I think even more significant in their day than ours, because kids, we talk about kids maturing now until they're in their 30s, because they don't take responsibility. In that culture, the kids are reaching majority at 12. And
yes.
the lifespan was 45, 48. So even in a normal life. So by 30, you've got to be well into your career or whatever. I think that'd be much more
pressure.
Their deal than our deal at that age. But yet, when does he discover and how does he discover? And then he goes on this incredible venture with God and dealing with the world and their reaction to him. And it just made it to me, reading it, discussing it again with you guys, plotting it out, just it made it so much more real.
Well, even to be able to do paintings of him as a child. And there's one that's not in here, but we never had a chance for. But I had a picture of Jesus running down a trail in the village as about 9 years old. And thought, he knew every trail in Nazareth. He knew the walls maybe he and his dad had worked on. He knew those people. And in those 30 years, he grew to fully trust Father, which prepared him for the last three.
Yeah.
And so much of our life I see is that way. Knowing Father through what you're doing. I know doggone well he was a great carpenter. But I also have learned carpentry. So I know that there were splinters in the hands. And, you know, the first time he cut a piece of wood, he probably screwed it up. And Joseph was patient, said, no, son, we don't go against the grain. We go with the grain, or however he was teaching him. And he had to learn that stuff. And
I mean, he didn't cut perfectly the first time?
No.
Without a T-square, nothing?
I'm not sure he learned that because he went against the grain quite a bit. Just my little interpretive thought there.
But see, those are the kinds of things that it's important to think about. I even talked to my kids and I said, here's something I want you to think about. You've complained about having a brother or sister that did things better. Imagine what it was like for James to have to say, Mom,
just
don't
be like Jesus.
That was Mary saying, just be like Jesus. And James is going, oh, for Pete's sake.
More wisdom than that.
But you know it got said one or two times. Or Joseph may have looked at him and said, will you just be like your brother a little bit more? I mean, you want to talk about a tough standard to live up to.
Yeah, it's hard being Jesus' kid.
That's why they all weren't real friendly during most of his life. Yeah, the brothers were not so involved.
You know, and you look at that stuff, even when the village, he comes back and he talks in Nazareth, and then they get so mad they try to throw him off the cliff.
Yeah, it was not a good day. But he just vanished.
Yeah, he got to sneak out of there.
He just vanished.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing that, you know, what I got captured afresh was just the genuine love affair that God has with us as his creation. He didn't rush it.
No.
I think he savored it. I think he enjoyed it. I think he wanted to be fully a part of it. And that, I think that's the aspect of, you know, quote, the pre-ministry time. I think we just have totally missed and not stopped and pondered the wisdom and the why and the what God was doing at that moment. It was not unimportant.
Yeah.
I just don't know that we have sat and really relished. I mean, the way it impacted me is I realized, gosh, Lord, you really are fascinated with us, the object of what you love. I ended up going like, I get this. Not like, oh, let's exalt humanity. It's no like, wow, you're so fascinated with us. I enjoy being fascinated with him. And I think that's the love of the worship relationship of just going like, wow, I had no idea that you actually cared about us this much or how fascinating you are.
And this is the things that I'm hoping when people now can stop a minute and start thinking. I had the joy of being able to paint Jesus as a little boy, just being in loving relationship with Joseph. And it just, I thought, yeah, Joseph would have loved to toss him in the air. I mean, I love tossing little kids in the air and laughing and giggling with them. And Jesus going, oh, this is cool. And enjoying the fact that God created us to have relationship with. What I said about same yesterday, today, and forever. The first thing he did with Adam and Eve is have a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. Now, he knew everything was going on, but he came and said, hey, guys, fill me in on the day. What's going on? You know, and how many times have we seen a little kid that we say, like I'll ask my grandson, what did you do today? You know, it's like, he's not going to wow me that, you know, well, I created an astrophysic vehicle that will break the speed of sound.
I could think one of your grandkids just might act that way. Yeah. You know?
Think of all the lectures they've had. But I think if we really grasp what Brad was just talking about, if Jesus grew in his identity to trust the Father, then why wouldn't it be true that we would too, and that God would savor that process with you? Because I get so many emails from people who kind of see from a distance, you know, I want to learn to live loved, I want to do that, and I'm just so impatient, and why can't I be better for God? And there's all this angst we put in our own human effort to try and be something. And I think part of religion gave us that bias, maybe, that God would love us more if we could act better today. Instead of, God is enjoying the process in you. That is winning you out of the places where sin has reigned and doubt has reigned and all those things have affected your life, that he wants to win you into a new identity and to a new space. And I think that if we could get comfortable with the fact that God did it that way with Jesus, then I think we would be so much less in a hurry to go, well, I'm going to get this fixed by next year, and I've got to have this change in my life, and I've got to. And all that drives, or even the despair, you know, around the first year, people are like, I should be further in my life with Jesus than I am today, or birthdays. Instead of, you know, if God enjoyed the process with his son, why wouldn't he enjoy it with his sons and daughters? And so, yeah, God knows you're lost. God knows there's lots of darkness in your life. But him loving and winning us into a better space of trust is a process that he's demonstrated over and over again he really enjoys. And that we could be at peace with it. Be at peace with God changing me today instead of, I should get this done. I should be better at that. And just, well, I'm not. This is where I am.
You made a comment one time when we were talking. And again, that's what I mean by we read the Bible backwards. If we look at John or Peter or Paul at the end of their lives, they make a statement, you know, I have learned to be content. Or I have been persuaded that God is able. And we assume, well, I should be persuaded then.
Like it's an intellectual argument. Yeah.
I mean, I've read the scriptures and I've gone to 16 sermons and I should be
that pill.
Or 116 or 1600 sermons.
Rather than realizing they're talking at the end of the life, the process has gone on.
Yeah, John's comment in 1 John 4, I love, we have come to know and come to rely on the love God has for us. Oh, man, I'm coming to know. I can say that. I wouldn't at this point in my life say, yeah, I've come to know and rely. I'm learning to rely on that love. But boy, when I'm an old man, which I'm getting close to now, that's what I want to say. I want to say with John, I've come to know and come to rely.
And the journey was worth it.
Yeah.
I had recently, a couple years back, I had a church leader come to me and say, Murray, you're a little too excited about the Lord. And I went.
Yeah, it's very threatening.
I went, what?
Could you be a little more depressed like the rest of us?
And that's kind of what he was saying. You could bring it down. And I'm sitting
there.
You're
making the rest of us look bad.
I'm trying to figure out, how do you answer that? And then I realized just this simple thought came to me. I said, well, let me ask you a question. He goes, what? I said, I was completely lost and I had no idea who God was. And God in his kindness came and spoke to me and invited me into his family. And he has walked with me as my father and he has blessed me in my life and I've got to know him better and better. Are you bored with God? And he went, what? I said, I know God more now than when I started. He's better. And I was kind of excited then, so I don't think I should be more bored now. Now, my personality is a little more exuberant than most people.
Go Tigger.
You're a passionate man.
Go Tigger. Go Tigger. He's a friendly big grizzly bear.
So, you know, and the guy looked at me and he goes, hump, and walked away. And I thought,
what do you say?
Hump.
You want to spell that too?
No. Okay.
Or maybe it was hump. But, you know, I realized, you know, I started praying for him, Lord. It is so easy for us at some point, and please don't let me get there, where that's as far as I'll go with you. This is pretty good. I've got it together. Life's okay. And that's as far as you are. And what I call it is a God box. We like to determine how big God should be in our life. And when we're comfortable, that's as far as we let him go.
Yeah. And we talk about you and the way we've done this show and the last podcast that we did. People get an image of your life. You know, award-winning artist and, you know, been on this Jesus journey since you're 14, had God reveal neat things to you. You also deal with some, and without detailing them, some significant health issues in your life and prayers for healing that haven't gone answered in the way you would hope. And there's also, I mean, that's why I love really fleshes out humanity. This is not a perfect, easy road for any of us.
No, you know.
Today's even, a good day, huh?
Yeah, even to mention off what you did, I mentioned the Army. I was given till 26 when I got out of the Army. They said, you won't make it past 26.
Living.
Yeah. That's it. And, you know.
I think those are the guys we should put on the front lines, just as a parenthetical.
But
you're not going to make till 26 anyway.
You know, the blessing is my youngest son is more than 26.
Yeah.
So I was looking at that, and like you said, I've been on the ministry field where we've prayed for people, and I've seen people healed miraculously, but I also know hundreds I've prayed for where I didn't, and you're right. I mean, I deal with some really serious lung issues and some heart issues, but I'm blessed that I'm here.
Yeah, and some family issues. I mean, your life is a real life like anybody. I guess that's what I want to try and put out.
It is.
I think we create an image, and then people don't get that this is real life, and but what did it feel like for you to hold this in your hands the first time this morning? This is something you've lived with 20 years in your heart.
Honestly, disbelief.
Yeah? Still not real yet?
It's not real. I'm holding it, and I'm going, okay, that's another comp. It's not really in my hand.
It's a real one.
And then I looked at it, and it's really there. And then it's like, well, okay, now it's here. This is what was on your heart all these years ago, and God's taken you on this journey, and you've met with Brad and Wayne, and we've rewritten it, and it's more than you expected, and it's all there. And you go, okay.
You know what becomes real, I think? When you walk in someone's home and it's on their it's on their patio table or coffee table. Or, and I don't think we'll see too many of these in airports. They're going to be tough to travel with. But, you know, when you walk through an airport and see somebody holding something you were a part of, that's a moment.
What I am hoping for moments of that you started to give me the first one is when you told a story that you had this on a iPad, one of the comps we had done, and you started reading it to your granddaughter.
Yeah, I was on vacation a couple months ago. We just completed it, just were getting it all ready to go off to the printers. And I sit down with Amy, she's six, and I'm thinking, she's got this little Jesus storybook Bible, which we recommended a while back. Great book for kids, except my daughter sent it over here one night when they're reading the atonement story. And the atonement story in that just,
I couldn't read it. I had to stop a paragraph in going,
I edit a lot of those.
Oh, mostly you don't have to on this book. Mostly you don't. The Old Testament stories are fabulous. When I got to the cross story, I had to throw it out and just tell the story. I looked at the pictures and I told Amy the story. That's when right after that, I wrote this story of the Atonement, the one in here, at least my contribution to that bit of the story. And I got a chance when we were in the mountains to start reading this to Amy. And she was just fascinated by the pictures. And I remember when we turned to Mary, she goes, oh, is that Mary? I said, no, honey, it isn't Mary. It's who Murray thinks Mary might have looked like.
There you go.
Which is good for the process.
Yes.
But then it was, well, how did it happen that Jesus was in her? And we got this amazing. And then when I was done, she goes, can we read another one, Grandpa? Because it's like, you know, it's nice, your bedtime story. You get one, you know, and you go to bed. And she was one. And then the next night, she goes, are we going to read that story again? She was, and we didn't write this for kids. There's a lot in these vignettes, theologically, that, yes, I think plow pretty deep. But they're written very simply. And it not that Amy would understand everything that I'm reading to her, but the combination of what I was reading in the pictures, as you said, when we were done with everyone, well, how about this, Grandpa? And what about this? And what about that? And I had some of the best theological times I've had with my 6-year-old granddaughter just by going over the comps. And my 3-year-old was kind of hanging around, looking at pictures, interested, not the same level that Amy was, but, and I really came back to tell you that, going, I love the fact that this drew in some kids to a story, and then we get to talk about it, not just when I'm reading this off my iPad, but when we're, you know, playing out on the lake later in the day or whatever, something comes up about it, and Amy's mind is still thinking about these things. And
that's been my heart's cry since the beginning, so a couple more of those, and it's a home run out of the park for me. Because somebody once said, well, you invested all this time and all this effort and you're going to get money back. And I said, I never did it for that.
Yeah.
You can't do it for that. But the God brought it through this journey, which I never would have expected. And I can't wait to take this home and hug my wife with it.
It is a visual feast. I mean, I think one of the things that was scary to me as a writer coming in was, how do we write stories that come up to the level of this art? Because this is art like I've never seen before about Jesus. And first century Palestine is, I think, artistically fairly boring with grays,
yes,
and browns and
it
all that.
Is.
You've done things with light and color and sunsets and skies and that just bring out, still being authentic to the day, and yet bringing out just a vibrance. And this is a visual feast. I think people will enjoy it. Like I said, I was one trying to buy just the pictures when I hated what was inside. But it was scary to go, man, are we going to be able to write stuff that won't distract from these paintings? And somehow it's been fun. I mean, I like the companion of them now. I like how they fit together.
And I have the same comfort level. You know, as you said, my journey in life has become more and more less about function and systems and stuff to do right, but to know him and to partner with you guys who God has taken you, I believe, the same place, that it's about knowing him and helping others to know him. I'm just looking forward to those kinds of stories. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't even have any thoughts in that vein as how much or whatever. But I know if I can stand before the Lord someday, and maybe he'll bring somebody up next to me and go, oh, by the way, they saw something and I was able.
You see, that's what I think this book does, perhaps like anything else I have not come across, is I think it allows you to ponder something of the life of Christ in a way that you end up going like, I don't know that I knew that. But for me, it left me going, I don't know that I know him in totality. I think the questions that this asks and the little musings have so expanded my sense of wonder of just going, man, Lord, I don't think we have really camped here long enough to understand what you've done, how you did that. I think so oftentimes preaching is, well, here's your 3 points and here's this, yeah, and you know, it's definitive and it's there. And I'm just going like, this adds mystery and a sense of wonder back for me to the life of Christ.
Well, yeah. I think the testimony of the three of us is, in doing this process, all three of us went through the same thing, that we've been involved, we know the Lord, we love him, we've been walking with him, but even just taking the time of reworking this together, he's freshened things to me. The Gospels to me are so fresh compared to what they were even a couple years ago. It's like, I've read them so many times, I know them.
Yeah.
It's almost like you skim through them. I know that, and I'll find that special verse in it. Where now I treasure just reading through and saying, whoa, slow down.
slow down.
Yeah, it's like it brought the scriptures alive again in a way that just made me want to go, okay, what else have I missed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the art is a wonderful help of just making you kind of pensive. I really enjoy it. I mean, I look at some of the spreads and I'm going like, I bet people are going to want some of those to keep.
Well, you know, the fun thing that happened for me in advertising, there's a basic rule of thumb. One, stop somebody. Two, tell them one thing that draws their interest. If you do that, they will read what it is you're doing. And that was my hope in this. And working with you guys, I had the one I could stop you. I love the little headlines we have on each one because to me, that's the bait. That's like the best car ever. You know, why don't you have this soda in your refrigerator? And then the wonderful copy after that that explains and invites you into the story, but it doesn't tell you everything. It just invites you in to go, have you pondered this? Do you know this God? What is this? You know, is this something about you that you have just, you've taken this capsule that's been kind of placed on you and this is what it means?
Yeah.
And Father is so much bigger than that.
Well, after talking about it for 2 years, it'd be sure good to get these in the hands of some folks that are going, I'd love to see these things. So I know we're giving you a little earlier than we can actually ship you books, but if you want to go to windblownmedia.com, livestream.org, or mwart.net, org and net, we got all covered, but you can pre-order those, and as soon as we get them in, we'll ship them out to you. Let me ask you, Murray, are you still planting churches?
No. What I'm doing is a lot more, actually my favorite church place right now is Starbucks. I have coffee with a lot of people talking about what's going on in their life and what the journey is like. When I share the gospel with people now, it's much more, where's your journey in life and what's working for you? There's an expression a friend of mine used to like. People tell me what's going on in your life and they're doing this and that. And a friend of mine used to say, how's that working for you? And so somebody I'll...
Is your friend Dr. Phil?
No.
Oh, okay.
But I knew a pastor from England one time and was walked with the Lord, had such a gentle spirit. And I asked him, I said, how do you share the Lord? And he said, well, I'm on a train somewhere and somebody's next to me and I ask them, what's going on in your life? And they tell me about their journey and what they're hoping for and their plans and their fears. And he said, I really valued them as a person. I really like what's going on. And he said, normally at the end of it, they say, oh, by the way, what's going on in your life? And he says, well, I'm on a journey too. And a wonderful person met me and has kind of helped me along. And he says, I share with them who Jesus and the Father are to me. And I said, and what happens? How many get saved? And he goes, as many as are ready. And otherwise, I just told him about my best friend. There's a funny story. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Harvey with Jimmy Stewart.
I think I must have a long time ago. I don't watch many black and white movies, but go ahead.
It's
was that born?
It's yeah.
No.
It's a the whole thing about Harvey is he's a giant white invisible rabbit called a puka, and he does magical things, and everybody thinks Jimmy Stewart's crazy for seeing him. But there's the best sign, symbol, picture, story of sharing Jesus I've ever seen. He's sitting in a bar, and he says, they ask him, what do you do? He says, I sit in the bar and people come in and I talk to them about their life and they tell me their problems and their difficulties and their situations and I listen to who they are. And then I introduce him to Harvey and he's bigger and more grand than amazing anything they've ever met.
He's a pastor.
And I thought, that's what we get to do.
Yeah, but most people are afraid God is an invisible rabbit. That's what they're afraid of.
Okay,
he's maybe that story's not. That's where the analogy breaks down, obviously.
Yes, there's always a problem with that.
But having gotten to know you over the last couple of years, I've seen a real transition. I mean, there was a part of you at the time that was really frustrated in religious systems that seemed to always not have the same priorities that were on your heart, that were too concerned that you were too excited. And I've watched
that
change
that
into...
revelation.
Relationships with people and doing things with your art that puts you around people where the conversation with people becomes the expression. But certainly there are people in your family and friends now that think Murray and Betsy have left the fold.
Oh, yeah. They thought we've gone off the deep end. What happened? You know, you haven't been in church last Sunday.
Not for a year or so.
You know, and you're going like, and I go, you know what? I still love the Lord. I'm walking with him and talking with him, and he's working in our life, and this is just the season we're in.
You say, I've been working on his book.
And, well, it's funny. Now that the book is done, people are like, well, now you're going to come back and do the other things you used to do. And no, I'm going to do whatever is the next step, which I don't have a clue.
Yeah.
That makes me a little nervous, but that's the reality of life is God doesn't explain the next step all the time. But just getting to know him and talking with people and having him in our home or talking to neighbors or, you know, opportunities that you just don't get. I mean, you know, I started looking at the scriptures again, realizing in the early church, you didn't bring people to church to get saved. You shared with them, were involved in their life. They came to know the living God, and then they wanted to fellowship with you. That sounds like a good pattern to me. Hmm. And it's so hard, you know, in so many meeting places, it becomes about the meeting. There's an hour and 10 minutes or 67 minutes or whatever the time frame is. You got to get in, you got to get out, you got to do the stuff, and you go on. And you say hi to people. Years back, I changed that method. A guy would say hi to me in church, and I'd shake his hand and not let go. And I'm a big enough guy at 6'4" something that they kind of, and they kind of look at me like, okay.
Have you read Boundaries?
and I'd say, what's going on in their life? And they go, it's fine. And I said, and I wouldn't let go. I said, what does fine mean? And they go, well, fine is fine. I said, that's not an answer. I said, you're playing spiritual ping pong with me. And they go, what do you mean? I said, here's spiritual ping pong. We come to church and you say, how you doing? Dink. And the other guy goes, good. Dink. Then you say, bless the Lord. Dink. And he goes, God is good. Dink. Well, how are things going on? Dink. Thank God. Dink. Well, isn't God good? Dink. Yes. I love you, brother. Dink. And they walk away and you know nothing about them other than you've dinked together.
Wow. No wonder they tell you to tone it down when you're around sometimes. That might be what they're talking about.
Are you sure they want you back?
May not.
Well, as excited as I am about this book, Sarah and I have just treasured the growing friendship we have with you.
It's been wonderful to know you guys.
To me, that's been the greater treasure of getting to know you. And it was fun. So we've got another book to put out there, huh, Brad?
Yes, sir. Christmas. That's a good Christmas gift.
It would be a great. I'm going to get me a bunch for sure.
Traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com,